Welcome to Real Life, Real Talk. Hope you're having a great Saturday morning. Good morning to you, Beth. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
Is it raining?
It is spring.
I think, like, you know, in the spring, there's rain and the flowers come up in April. Is it raining there in Cincinnati?
Well, we are pre-recording the show, so unfortunately today in Cincinnati, it actually snowed.
Oh, that's dirty.
No, I don't think anybody expected it. I don't think any, all of a sudden we woke up this morning like, hey, it's snowing.
Oh,
and in typical Cincinnati fashion, everybody sort of went half the speed that they normally do, even if they didn't need to.
Wait,
it's just kind of fun.
Reason sometimes to slow down. If the snow brings it, then the snow brings it. But,
well, of course you say that because you're the worst snow driver ever.
The last winter that I lived in Cincinnati, I literally had 7 flat tires from sliding and gashing my tire on curbs and medians and just really anything that is in the way of the road. Seven times. Like, tire number 6, the guy said, do you want, like, insurance on these?
Right, you might want to do something about that. Hey, we got a great show today. Let's just jump in right now before people are wondering what we're talking about. Tell us about the show today. We got a great show.
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about, Jean Johnson's going to be on our first segment. She wrote a book called We Are Not the Hero. The subtitle is A Missionary's Guide for Sharing Christ, Not a Culture of Dependency. And really, after the response we got from the When Helping Hurts guest, Dr. Brian Fickert, I knew this was a great next step for us to just be chatting about, you know, there are better ways to do things. And something is not always better than nothing. In fact, something sometimes can be a step backwards instead of a step ahead. And so she's going to really talk to us about her 16 years in Cambodia and the things that she learned while she was there. So anyway,
as you said, it's a great backup or step with when we had Dr. Fickert on, because she's going to talk a lot about what it's like to avoid bringing American culture to other cultures and confusing that with what it means to bring a Christian message to other places. And sometimes that's hard for American people on the mission field, either short-term or long-term, to wrap their arms around. So that'll be great. And then the second half of the show, we got 2 guests today, right? So
we
the
do.
Second half of the show, we're going to build on that, too.
Eric Thurman, he runs the David C. Cook Mission arm called Global Mission, and he literally has traveled to 100 countries. I met him for the first time just a few weeks ago and was fascinated by his stories and insight and experience, and I knew that we'd want to invite him and introduce him to our listening audience. So anyway, I'm glad he'll be able to join us in the second segment. It's
going to
be a very international show today.
An international show. You're calling from Monterey. We have guests who, you know, live in Cambodia or travel to 100 countries, and so I'll feel very, very international by the end of the show.
Hey, I just read in Christianity Today, I like that magazine, speaking of bringing a Christian message versus an American message, they had this whole section on something called the Insider Movement, which is basically something that we might have a hard time wrapping our brains around, but it's about folks who live inside of the Muslim faith that as born-again believers. It was quite fascinating.
Actually, I haven't read that. If you would forward to me the link, that would be awesome, because I would love to read it. And I have been reading other articles, blogs, journals about that, so I'd love to read the Christianity Today article. So that brings up a point.
What is there
that I need to make right now?
Tell me.
Right, because other people are probably listening to the show say, I wish she could forward that link to me.
Oh.
Right? Instead of you just forwarding it to your co-host, that's kind of selfish. So if you could forward it to me as a listener, that would be fabulous, right?
Okay, well,
So we have big news. We have big news. Right, so you remember, you may not remember, Sally Field at the Oscars like several million years ago, and she accepted her Oscar, and she said, oh, you like me, you really like me. That's kind of a famous Oscar line, right?
Oh,
do you remember that at all?
You know, I'm not sure I was born yet.
You were probably 4, yeah, I'm older than you. So anyway, she said, you like me, you really like me. And so I guess people like us.
Oh.
I'm unaware of this because I just usually talk to you, but we're getting a new time slot.
We are getting a new time slot.
We're moving to 10 o'clock on Saturday mornings, like a prime slot, 10 o'clock Eastern time, 7 o'clock on the West Coast. And the reason is because people were saying, hey, we need to hear you at a better time.
I'm thinking those Californians, they're not going to know what hit them. Their alarm's going to go off blaring out of the clock radio, if anybody has those anymore, are XM 131 Real Life with Rob and Beth. And we're going to be the first thing they hear when they wake up.
That's exactly right. And you just said the second part. We better be. I mean, we can't step back now. But so people have liked us. They've liked us. They wanted a better time. So we got a new better time, 10 o'clock on Saturdays. And you just let the other cat out of the bag. We have a new name for the show.
We do.
Real Life with Beth and Rob. How's that?
I think it sounds like a great title and a great time. And it starts in April. So for the next few weeks, you can continue to catch us at our current time. But starting in April, April 6th, we'll be on at 10 o'clock.
We are moving up. Our names have actually entered the title of the show.
Good thing they're short.
That's right. So anyway, that's big news.
So starting
in April, the first Saturday in April, we'll be on at 10 o'clock, thanks to public demand. And in addition to that, this is how this conversation started. We will have a new website up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Right? RealLifeWithBethAndRob.com.
Yeah.
That's pretty easy. It's the name of the show. And that's where people, like I just said to you, could you send that article to me?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Now we'll just post it on the website. And if people say, hey, I want to read that Christianity Today article about the insider movement that I heard on Real Life with Beth and Rob, they can just go to the website and there it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a hot spot to go. And just post questions, read blogs. Rob and I will be talking about some of the things that we were still thinking about after the show ended, about whoever our guests were. There'll be links to their bios and materials and references and YouTube videos.
Right.
And it'll be
and people and people can join the conversation. They can they can write us. It won't be just a one-way deal. They can say, hey, listen, I thought the show was great except for that meaningless banter at the beginning. That was something like that. So that's exciting news.
Okay, speaking of shows being great, my family has just gotten into this show that I have to confess I was a little reluctant about. In fact, they were like three episodes into it before I finally sat myself down to watch it with them.
Right.
But we are now into the tidal wave of momentum that's called Duck Dynasty.
Seen it? Yes. We watch Duck Dynasty at our house all the time. It is one of those shows that's DVR'd on a regular basis.
It's so unbelievable to me. I mean, of course, I started hearing about in the press that the family that is represented on this reality TV show, Duck Dynasty, are believers. So, you know, I was kind of intrigued by that. But there's something about it that you can't stop watching it. And my children roar when they watch it. What do you like about it? Or do you have a favorite character?
I don't know that I am caught into the fascination of it. My kids and Christine is totally gaga for the show. I mean, she doesn't normally watch a lot of television, but she's gaga about the show. So it's entertaining, but those guys are crazy into it. They laugh. It's just an interesting sort of cross section, I guess, of American life or something. I don't know the fascination, but man, people are fascinated.
I'm thinking that I'd like to see a statistic on how many reality shows, how many minutes people spend watching reality shows versus, you know, scripted shows. Like,
right.
I mean, I can't even hardly remember what television was like before reality shows. Now we just want to see in people's closets, right? We want to see them look in the camera and give us their insight about their marriage, their kid, their job, their parent, their whatever. That's crazy.
Well, the one thing that I can say that I do appreciate about the show, it's funny and these people are quirky and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but at the heart of it is a great family who love one another.
Yeah, I do like that.
Right, and so it's funny and all those things, but at the end, they're just, it's about family being around for family and all those kind of things. So,
what a great message.
It's a good show. It is. So those folks out there who haven't seen Duck Dynasty, it's a safe, good family show to watch. So I can recommend it there. How's that?
I think that they just got a shout-out. And if we had our website up and running, we'd put a little link to Duck Dynasty in it.
We would. Perfect. And maybe we'll see if they would want to come on the show.
Oh, I think that's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Well, speaking of show, we're going to come back in just a minute, and Jean Johnson, the author of We Are Not a Hero, and is going to talk about her book and her life in Cambodia and a little bit of what it means to be a Westerner in an Eastern culture and try to be a missionary in those terms. So we'll be back right after this break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll see you in just a minute.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fantastic Saturday morning this morning. We're having a... Are you having a fantastic Saturday morning, Beth?
Morning. So I'm excited that we get to share it with our listeners this morning.
Absolutely. I'm having a great Saturday morning. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned in the first segment that we had Brian Fickert on. We had Brian Fickert on about When Helping Hurts, right?
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it's this interesting concept that actually when we go out to help folks, even with the best intentions, there are times unintentionally when we can actually be hurting instead of helping. And it was a great show. We had great response to it. And it's interesting when you start poking around at things like that, that you find other folks, other people who are sharing the same message. And so our guest today, Jean Johnson, is one of those. She's written a new book called We Are Not the Hero. And Jean has served as a missionary in Cambodia for 16 years, concentrating on church planting, worldview strategy methods among oral cultures, and on-the-job leadership training. Presently, she's a missionary and co-director with World Mission Associates, promoting missionary practices. I mean, this is a busy person,
she's
right?
She's going to have a lot to share, absolutely. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Jean, yes, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just get us started. What led you to write a book about your experiences?
Oh, wow. Well, several reasons. I think the first reason is because I myself have had missionary training, institutional missionary training in Bible college. But when I actually got to the field of practice, I felt like there was this huge gap between theory and practice.
Mm.
And I can just remember almost my first few days in Cambodia. One of the first experiences I had was I was walking down the street and there was this motorcycle coming and it lost control and two people fell off the motorcycle, and you could tell that the actual driver was severely injured. It looked like a head injury. There was blood. And I, from my little experience in Cambodia, I knew that just according to the culture and issues there, that nobody would step in to help him. And so I was just thinking in my head, here it goes again. You know, there's a tragedy and nobody's going to pitch in to help. And then all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a man running towards him. And I said, well, maybe it's going to be different this time. And as the man reached him, what he did is he jumped over the body, almost like a hopscotch game, where he went over the body, jumped over it back and forth three times, and then walked away. And so I just was overwhelmed, and I just turned to a Cambodian and said, could you explain to me what just happened?
Yeah.
And he said that basically what the Cambodian man was doing was calling the soul back into the body, because they believe when somebody's unconscious that the soul has left them, or the spirit, some kind of spirit, and they need to call it back into the body. So there I stood, 2 weeks on the mission field, and saying, wow, this is a whole worldview, a whole different way of thinking of things, how they interpret life. And so I had all of the theory of how to do missions, how to plant churches, how to make disciples. But it took me a long time to close the theory with practice. So what does this mean? on a daily basis. What does this mean when I make decisions? And so part of the reason of writing the book is to hopefully close that gap for other people. Not that you can completely close it, but to provide a resource that, because you waste a lot of time if you work out a theory for a long time.
Sure.
I'd like to cut down on people's learning curve if possible. So that's a big reason to just share, wow, this is what I learned. And if this helps you, great. Here's a baton. I pass it on to you, so to speak.
Jean, I am a missionary in Mexico. Our listeners know this is my 16th year here on the field, so I can certainly relate to that learning curve. And one of my favorite chapters was Chapter 8, this idea that we should conduct missions with more questions than answers. And Rob and I on the show often talk about exchanging ideas and how asking questions versus offering answers really in the end leads to better collaboration and better conclusion and a more posture of learnedness, you know. And so tell our listeners a little bit about where that idea came from to conduct your mission with more questions than answers.
Yeah, well, I think as an American, we often do come when we go in a cross-cultural setting, we come with the answers.
Sure.
And when you come with the answers, what it leads to is the answers usually come out of our own church experience. It usually comes out of our own worldview. I think we all, especially if you know, you have missionary experience, you realize that we do bring the gospel, but we often bring it wrapped up in our own culture. So when you bring the answers, you tend to bring the answers that worked for you in your homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Questions. The reason I did give answers initially, and then I began to realize that what questions do is several things. One is that questions provide the opportunity for them to find answers that work in their culture.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, I wrote about forms and function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And function would be like worship. I mean, that, you know, worship is a function. We want everyone who knows the Lord to worship. But the form of how they worship really needs to be, as you mentioned, collaborated and figured out from internally, inside, organically from that culture. Okay, yes, we want to worship, but what should the form of that worship look like according to our culture? So when I use questions, I try to use questions based on function, but allow them to discover the form. And so in a practical sense, let's say we're taking up worship. We've read together, we've seen that David worships, that there's exhortation in Ephesians and whatnot that we should worship the Lord. But then that's where the questions come in, where I would begin to be a catalyst and ask, okay, how do you feel about worship? What does worship look like in your culture? What kind of already organic instruments are you using in your culture that you could bring to the picture to worship God? So worship creates psychological ownership. Well, I guess I should just step back. The first thing I was trying to say is worship empowers it to come out of their culture. Secondly,
right.
It creates psychological ownership. Things that you discover yourself, you'll follow through. Things that seem to be given to you, imposed, spoon-fed you often, don't follow through. There's no skin in the game, so to speak.
Right, right. So we're talking with Jean Johnson, who is the author of We Are Not the Hero. And as we've been hearing about her experiences in Cambodia for 16 years, and the idea that, Jean, that we take our culture with us, and perhaps that leads us to provide, if I heard you right, answers to questions that people aren't asking. And the better position for us is to be in a posture of learning from the culture where we go to. Yeah, tell us a little bit, if you could, what is the key or urgent message that you would love for people to get as a result of reading through your book?
Yeah. I think the biggest message is that when I went into Cambodia, I conceptualized and organized the church based on the finances that I could bring into the picture, based on the culture that I imported into the country. And, of course, with that, So in other words, I conceptualize and organize based on my church experience, what I think church needs. And based on that, the Cambodians would come back and say, well, that we can't afford that. We're not there yet. And so as a missionary, what I did was, okay, don't worry about that. For now, I'll take care of it. I'll fill in the gap. And then someday down the road, you'll be ready, and you'll take over, and you'll take up that psychological ownership, and you'll take up that stewardship and that financial responsibility.
Right.
But what I quickly found in Cambodia is that that day never usually does not come.
Huh.
And the way I describe it, I believe in my book as well, but there's a story out there, and I heard a Cambodian pastor share this story, and this happens in Cambodia, Thailand, places like that, where they'll take a baby elephant and they'll chain it to a tree. They'll take the leg and they'll chain the leg to a tree, and then the baby elephant will encircle the tree again and again and again. And then when the baby elephant becomes an adult, they release the leg from the chain. And, you know, there's sort of that mindset, well, he's an adult elephant now. He'll go off and, you know, create life. But as we know, the adult elephant just continues to circle around the tree. Hmm. And so I found with my missionary experience that we often unconsciously, well-intended, as missionaries, we go over and we set up church in a way that's not reproducible, hard for the local culture to emulate, and we make up the gap and the difference and then hope that they'll come around and fill that in. And the mentality's already set by then. We can't do it like you do it. We'll never be able to do it like you do it. We're not good enough. And so my big message is, how can we go about the mission task, or in my case, planting churches, in a way where they don't end up like the elephant going around the tree?
That's a great
picture.
But
rather you make the first disciples, the first hand, you know, the missionary makes that first handful of disciples. But you make those disciples in such a way that they'll be able to perpetuate and make more disciples. I maybe perhaps train a handful of leaders, but I train them in such a way that they're going to perpetuate and train leaders. Same with churches. Plant churches in a way that they'll multiply and become movements. But I really feel the message in my book is, if we missionaries, if we continue to organize, conceptualize and organize the church based on the funding that we can bring in, based on the expertise that we can come in, we will be stuck in the first generation.
Yeah,
so that's kind of the big message of what are the enemies of multiplication and how do we avoid those.
Right. Well, we were talking with Gene Johnson, the author of We Are Not a Hero. Gene, where can people find the book if they're interested in picking it up?
Yes, you can go to my website, which is www.wearenotthehero.com.
Beautiful. Well, Gene, thanks so much for being on the show. It is such an important topic, especially as the Western Church thinks about going to other cultures and trying to influence them with the love of Jesus. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and may you have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Gene. Thank you so much. Beth, it made me think a lot about what's going on right now, even with back-to-back in Monterrey, about how initially you and Todd and a group of Americans made your way to Mexico with a particular mission, a particular idea, but over time you have begun to train and hand that over to people who, Mexican nationals, who are now carrying on your initial idea.
Yeah, and, you know, really, we're just still always learning, even a decade and a half later. I was thinking about, there's a pastor here who we've been helping him with his church for a long time. He's a national pastor, and it got big enough we began to build the second floor, and our gig was that we provided the materials, and he and the men in the church provided the labor. That was our way to try to be sustainable.
Right.
We were about to finish the second floor, and I said, let's hire the laborers to finish it. And he said, no, this is the best form of discipleship I can get with the men. Let's just build the third floor.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation after the break with Eric Thurman from David C. Cook. Hope you join us then. This is Real Life, Real Talk. We'll see you just after this.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Hope you're having a great Saturday morning. You caught me right in the middle of laughter there, so I hope I'm back. I hope I'm focused. Had just a funny off-the-air conversation, so sorry. I'm focused now, Beth. I'm sorry. I'm back. How are you?
Various things. International missions, dependency, sustainability. Come on, focus.
All kinds of things. I'm focused. And the show is only getting better. Eric Thurman is joining us, and you as with most of our guests, you know Eric.
I did. I just met him a couple weeks ago. Works with David C. Cook in their global mission. Eric, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Will you just take a minute to introduce yourself and what you're up to and your mission to our listening audience? Tell them a little bit about just
Sure.
What makes you go to work in the morning? What do you
say? Well, what makes me go to work in the morning is being involved in changing lives, especially with hurting kids.
Yeah.
Now, that's a big umbrella that covers a lot of things. So let me tell you a little bit about who Cook is and how we're contributing to that. Now, David C. Cook goes back almost 140 years. We're actually older than Coca-Cola.
Hey.
Yeah, David C. Cook was an actual person. He was a businessman in Chicago around the time of the Great Chicago Fire. And as you might be able to imagine, although it's unimaginable by today's standards, the city of Chicago became a third world site following the Chicago Fire. A lot of street kids, a lot of abuse. You literally had slave labor. You had child labor in factories, that sort of thing. And Cook was one of the people, along with a lot of other Christians, who organized to do something for these kids that were in danger. And that tradition just kept going. And until you roll forward to today, and David C. Cook is one of the largest producers of, like, Christian education, Sunday school-type programs, and PBS and that sort of thing in the whole world. And we do a lot of things in addition to that, but without going into all those details, we are a 501c3, which is a nonprofit, so that when people buy books from David C. Cook or from CDs from our music division, Integrity, that earning becomes something that I can use along with donations, along with the intellectual property we have here, which is considerable, to reach out to other parts of the world. And what we've specifically been doing is we've been reaching out on the other half of the child intervention issue. What do I mean by other half? We call it half a child, because so many people are conscious of the problems that street kids and orphans have in other parts of the world, and they want to do something. But most of the time, the best efforts are going into the physical needs, and those are very real. Glad people are doing that. Good to have kids fed and clean water and good shoes and those sorts of things. But there's another half of the child that really needs attention, which is the emotional hurts, the trauma that they've been through, and really the spiritual formation to help them figure out what life can be all about. And one of the reasons why we connected up with you folks at Back to Back, and this has been about a year ago, I got to know your husband, Todd, is that you're one of the few groups that we've encountered that is really working consciously and deliberately and thoroughly on both sides of the wounded child. And we're excited about that. We're working with you to actually spread that more, especially in Latin America. But that's the basics, is that we're trying to make sure that the entire child's needs are being addressed.
We're talking with Eric Thurman from David C. Cook. And Eric, number one, I love your blog, ericthurman.com. For our listeners, great pictures, you know, really gets a sense of where you've been and what you're doing. You've been to 100 countries. What's your opinion about sort of the American missionary experience going and bringing culture to different places?
Those two words I don't like putting together.
There you go.
Mission and culture, because my worldview is that the gospel transcends culture. In fact, one of the things that I especially like about being involved cross-culturally is that I think I get a purer exposure to what the gospel is like when I see it in other cultures. We have to be very careful what we link with the gospel, because it pollutes it, frankly, when we start saying that it has to go with a particular set of political views or, you know, a notion of prosperity or any of these things that can very easily happen. So, no, the gospel stands on its own and transcends culture. I think we have trouble whenever we link the two.
And, you know, I think certainly our listening audience is interested in international things. We're always talking with folks in other countries. And what was kind of your first step into missions, into understanding what was going on around the world? How could someone put their big toe, go from I'm kind of curious about the other half of the child to, you know, I've been to 100 countries and I work in full-time vocationally in that way? Like, what are some ways that people can kind of put their big toe in being a part of what you're up to?
Well, one of the things that I would point you to, and thank you for the kind comment about my personal website and blog, but there's another one that our organization runs called globalchurch.com. And the globalchurch.com is a place where you can actually download materials that get used in other parts of the world for children who are damaged one way or another. I mean, it's amazing how many of these kids have witnessed murder and have been just so hurt. You know, many times we have some bad experience in our lives once, and then we worry about it the rest of our lives. But many of these kids have just been abused over and over and over and over again. So how do you bring about an intervention that heals them of that? Well, there's some sample materials that are on that website you can download for free. And I don't care what city you live in America, there are kids that have some of these traumas. I don't want to pretend for a minute that the crises that American kids have compared to what's going on, like in Mexico where you're working, or Nigeria where Back-to-Back is working, those kids have bigger issues. But there are still very real hurts that kids have in America. And you can get access to those kids and actually get some experience working with them. And we've got some materials we can make available. But then the other thing that is so rich is the cross-cultural experiences. And where I got started was years ago, I was part of planting a church in suburban Chicago, and we started working with refugees who were being resettled into Chicago. And that became my immersion into cross-cultural experiences. At that time, there were Vietnamese boat people that we started working with. And I think I benefited more than they did, but they certainly benefited as well.
One of the things that I really like about the material that you all have produced is the role of the local church in it, and the idea that you don't have to be a counselor, you don't have to be a pastor or a missionary. You can start in, your entry point is as a mentor. You can just begin to form a relationship. And one of the things that Rob and I talk about a lot on the show is encouraging people to form relationships kind of outside of their natural circles or spheres of influence, and how to reach out to cross-culturally in their own community. We just had Dr. David Ireland talking about interracial relationships and friendships. And so anyway, tell us a little bit about what you believe the local church and the role of mentors could play in the life of a hurt child.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. I think that a hurting child, more than anything else, is looking for continuity of somebody who can be trusted. And it's not that you have to have a graduate degree in psychology to know how to help a child. It's that you have to be present for the child, and if you can produce some continuity, that really helps. Many of these kids have not experienced anything that begins to look like normalcy, and what does a healthy family look like? What does constructive conflict look like? You know, they've never witnessed an argument that was producing something good as an outcome and finding resolution, and didn't have to breach trust in the process. Now, there is an institution that is designed to create exactly those environments. It's called the church. Even when we may have struggles at seasons of our own families, that the church is a larger family, and it was God's design so that there would be people within it. Not every church is not perfect any more than everybody who's in a hospital is healthy. But there are people in hospitals that can help you with whatever your problem is, and the same thing with the church. There are always people that God has put in the church that can be your mentor, but you can be the mentor also, like you said. What our role then is, what's the value add that David C. Cook brings, is we digest down the proven best practices for how to deal with all kinds of issues, whether it's a child is trying to overcome repeated rape, for example. Is it possible? I mean, how would you even talk to a child about that? Well, the fact is, there are ways, and we have sat with experts in that, and then we work with them to digest ways that a layperson can be able to do, provide that kind of help.
Right. Eric, can you join us for just a minute after the break?
My pleasure.
That would be great. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We're talking to Eric Thurman from David C. Cook, and we're going to continue that conversation right after the break. Join us in it. See you then.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Our guest right now is Eric Thurman from David C. Cook. Eric, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure.
Great.
You know, Eric, one of the things that I just wanted to close out with is when I got to spend some time with you a couple weeks ago, we were talking about kind of the church movement and some of the Asian cultures and some of the African cultures, and I was just encouraged by some of the field reports, the first-hand reports that you have through your organization of the way in which the gospel is spreading around the world. And I just, the tagline of our radio show is Conversation to Inspire Your Day. And I wanted to leave our listeners with a little bit of good news about the ways in which the gospel is moving. So could you give us just something,
in a couple of days, I'll be climbing on an airplane and heading to China.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people have snippets of understanding of what's happening in China. Mm-hmm. With the church, and there are controversies of all kinds. There's a proverb that says that anything you say about China is true somewhere.
So
there's religious freedom, there's persecution, depends on where you are. But on the whole, I'm so enthusiastic about the valuable contribution the church is making in China. You know, when they've had some of these big earthquakes, many times the church now, broadly speaking, is responding beyond even what the government is able to respond. It's mobilizing people. It may be the largest church in the world. It may be the greatest thing that has happened in the history of the church. Yes, there is some difficulties. I don't think they're being stamped out by any means. I'll meet with lots and lots of church leaders in the coming days. What's fascinating to me that I think is very healthy is the majority of the churches, registered and unregistered, are led by lay people.
Hmm.
And there's just a real vitality and personal engagement that is the natural trait of that church.
Hmm.
And in fact, I don't know if this will raise a controversy, but the majority of pastors are women.
Oh, I like that.
That's not controversial to us.
It's not controversial with me either. I think that's one of the secrets of success. But the whole idea where we struggle in the West that we sometimes want to kind of compartmentalize our lives, and so we do our workouts on Thursday and we do our shopping on Saturday and we do our faith on Sunday and that sort of thing. That isn't the way it works with the church in China. These people have very holistic, integrated lives. It's one seamless whole. And I just see greatness there. It's really inspiring to me to be around. And you see this played out in different ways in different parts of the world. Like we're very involved right now in Uganda. A third of the population belongs to one giant denomination in Uganda. It's called the Church of Uganda. It's Anglican. But they have 25,000 churches and 5,000 schools. They are working with us to take these same materials because they wanted to be sure that the kids that are dealing with heartbreak because of seeing family members die from AIDS, or they've seen Muslim violence or conies, murders in the north, those kinds of things. They wanted to be able to minister to those needs. and in the practical ways, and are. So it's fun to know that there's such a vitality, because I think the essence that Jesus said he was going to do is he came to bring life, bring life now and bring it eternally. And so where there's just the broken hearts, dead spirits, those are the kinds of things that he wants to bring life to, and his agent for that is primarily the church.
Well, Eric, thanks. I feel like we're only scratching the surface, but thanks so much for being on the show. Perhaps at a date or more dates in the future, you could join us again.
There are lots of stories to tell. It'd be fun to tell you about them.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you. Eric, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Blessings to you. Just as I said, I'm not kidding. I mean, it feels like we're with Eric especially. He's a great storyteller. It feels like we're just scratching the surface of what really we could open our eyes in the Western world to what's going on in the rest of the world with the gospel.
I mean, I was thinking about the verse in Colossians, all over the world, this gospel is bearing fruit and growing. I mean, sometimes we can just be so overwhelmed. I was looking at the Fox headline news this morning and, you know, seeing about just the stuff that is going on in our schools and the stuff that's going on in our celebrity culture and what's happening in our courtrooms, and you can just be like, you know, the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket. But the truth of the matter is God's Spirit's all over the whole entire globe, and he is moving his church and empowering them.
Absolutely. So I do hope we can get him back on the show. Not only does he have like the perfect radio voice, I mean, holy cow.
He was kind of smooth.
Man, I was like, wow, that guy, I could listen to him talk a lot. But some great stories. And are we allowed to talk a little bit about the sort of the relationship between Back to Back and David C. Cook that's kind of blossoming?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things...
I hope we're allowed, because I just said it, so I hope we're allowed to talk about it.
Well, certainly. We have translated some of their materials into Spanish, and we hope to help spread that through Latin America. One of the things that we share so much DNA with them is this idea, they call it half a child, we call it the child development model, but it's that same principle. In fact, when I was there, I was telling them, some people, when they hear other organizations who are doing what they're doing, they feel threatened or competitive. I think, oh, praise the Lord, I'm not the only person turned into that channel, because if I'm the only person saying something, then I'm probably the one that's wrong. But when you hear confirmed in other organizations who are tuned into the Holy Spirit and come places completely far away from where you are, thinking and saying and acting in the same ways, you know that God is imprinting his heart and passion on us all. But this idea that we can't just take care of them physically, and we can't just tell them about Jesus, although Jesus obviously is more than enough, and you can't just educate them, but there are real wounds that happen in their life and that are obstacles and barriers to their growth, and just how to engage the local church and the nationals in addressing those needs so that people can continue to grow and grow into healthy families.
You know, I really enjoy these kind of shows. Again, with Brian Fickert before, and with Gene Johnson earlier today, you know, there's a quote on the inside of Gene Johnson's book, We Are Not the Hero, who we talked about in the first segment. It talks about a new Western colonialism. And so, brief history lesson, you know, when the Western world went and colonized, like, India or Africa or South America or whatever, they brought their culture with them, and imparted their culture on the people there, and that the church unknowingly has been doing that themselves. And so I am just so intrigued, excited, motivated by hearing stories like we heard from Gene today and Eric today about how the church is sort of learning a lesson, that it's not so much about that colonialism anymore, but it is about taking the gospel, as Eric said, which transcends all culture, and allowing it to live and breathe within the culture of the people who live there. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, she has a quote in her book that says, when white people come in, this is not her speaking, she was quoting another a native Cambodian, but when white people come in with a lot of money and know-how and try to make things better, that's when things go to hell. Why can't white people just visit? Why must they always meddle? It's as if you were invited to dinner at someone else's house, and during your very brief visit, you insisted on rearranging all the furniture in the house to suit your own taste.
Yeah.
I think that's what we do sometimes, right? We
yep.
assume that your furniture, you must not like it like this. Let me tell you the much better way to do it. We end up offending, taking it backwards.
Yeah, and beyond just offense, we end up actually taking several steps backwards in trying to allow people to experience the love and grace of Jesus, we actually stand in the way of that happening by insisting that they do it in a cultural way that's comfortable for us. So a book like We Are Not the Hero, a book like When Helping Hurts, organizations like David C. Cook and Back to Back that get that, that's the exciting stuff, is that people are starting to rally around that idea.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at missional trends, this is definitely the conversation to have. If you're interested at all in outreach or missions, if you're doing anything with other, you know, interculturally or cross-culturally, this is the conversation you got to be having. How does the message of the gospel fit within the already existing just even social structure? That's what I was trying to say at the end of the second segment when I offered to this pastor that I love here to go ahead and pay some laborers to finish the second floor so their church can expand. He looked at me like I was crazy because I brought my American value of let's get her done as fast as possible to that storyline. And he said, if you finish my second floor, Beth, I'm going to start a third floor. Because when I co-labor beside men in my congregation to work in this construction, it's the best form of discipleship I can have. If I had a men's meeting on a Saturday, a quarter of these people would show up. I have a work day on the church, I get tons of people. And I thought, I was assigning my higher value of accomplishment to the relational nature of his ministry.
Yeah. Well,
always something to learn.
Yes, absolutely right. And as we've said before, if you like this show, you want to pass it on, or you want to go look in the archives for that show with Brian Fickert or any other show that we've had, you can go to BethKuchenberger.com, and all the shows are right down there. The lower right-hand corner says Real Life, Real Talk. You click on there, and every show that we've ever done during this first year or more is on there. And you can join probably what is by now 650 or 700,000 folks who've downloaded shows. So that's an exciting thing. And it leads into someday, very soon, you won't have to go to BethKuchenberger.com, right?
No, you can go to RealLifeWithBethAndRob.com.
That starts in April, and as we announced at the beginning of the show, we're getting a new time. And one of the reasons I'm really excited is there are a bunch of people on the West Coast who probably won't hear this show because currently it airs at 5 in the morning. But when we move to our new time at the beginning of April, which is 10 Eastern, 7 on the West Coast, we got a whole new group of people, a whole new audience that will be able to hear great guests, great stories like the ones we had today.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. We also have the shows are all available currently on iTunes. So if you look up Real Life, Real Talk on iTunes, you'd be able to download past shows. And if shows of today's nature are particularly interesting to you, international shows, at least once a month we have a show that talks about something that's going on around the world. It absolutely, like the American pastor that's currently finding himself in jail in Iran for opening an orphanage and not denouncing his faith. I mean, I think those are things we should be talking about as churches and in our conversations throughout the day. These issues are not remote. They are, if they're happening within the body, they should be feeling like they're happening to us. So let's continue to be informed about what God's doing around the world.
Yep, absolutely. We got a great show lined up next week. Jonalyn Fincher and Bo Stern, both authors, both women authors, talking about women's issues. And so I got lots of questions about that. I've been trying for 22 years to understand my wife's issues, and she's been trying to.
You got a lot to learn, still.
I got a lot to learn. So next week will be an opportunity to do that when they're on the show. And so I'm looking forward to that. So that's next week. Still at that 8 Eastern time slot. So I'm looking forward to that.
I am looking forward to it, too. It'll be like ladies' night here at Real Life, Real Talk.
That's right. Hey, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We hope you're having a great Saturday. Thanks for spending part of it with us. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Kuchenberger. And we're going to do this again next week. So we'll hope you join us then. Until then, have a great Saturday.